Welcome back to Left of Normal, where everything that isn't right is left, and everything that is left is right. I'm your host, Scott Seary. Before we get started, thanks for being here. I appreciate you and your support. If you could help me make my world a little bit saner by clicking the like and share buttons, and then send this episode to someone you know who might find it enjoyable, encouraging, educational, or just plain entertaining. That would be awesome. So last week we didn't have an episode, but I did type up my ideas and put a big long social media post on Facebook and LinkedIn. Couldn't do that on Twitter. It was 3,000-ish words, I think. No, 3,000 characters. 3,000 words would be a lot. Twitter does not allow me to do 3,000 characters. Anyway, some people saw that. They gave me some feedback on it. That was great. I appreciated that. There was a previous episode that had a similar topic that I linked to about how gifted kids end up with more anxiety later in life. I do check my stats on those, and I can't see who actually turned in. I don't see the particular details of the person. I can see when people turned in, and it looks like one person checked that out. I suppose it's better than the last time I tried reposting a previous episode, and I had nobody listen. So I just wondering out loud here, if you have insights, you could leave a comment. Do people just forget that quickly? Or they don't care? Or maybe they just don't see the posts? I know social media algorithms absolutely suck unless you're posting a ton of content. Then they love you because you're getting eyes on your stuff, you're making lots of money for big social off the advertising. So kind of throws us into a bit of a conundrum here. If you have popular stuff and your stuff gets shown more often, but you can't get more popular stuff if the sites aren't going to actually show your stuff. So the rich get richer and the poor stay poor, in other words. Anyway, that's where I need your help. The whole like, comment, and share stuff ensures more people see this. It gets outside of my limited network. And then when I see the stats, I can see that hopefully more than 18 people have tuned in to the newest episodes. If you can copy and paste the link, maybe a few words on your own thoughts on what you enjoyed about the episode, tag me in it if you want. That would help things get picked up even better and go a little bit further. All right, moving on. This week we are looking at anger on the spectrum. We're seeing what causes anger, where it comes from, how it's displayed, and what kind of what brings it back around type thing. Before we jump in, I want to define anger just a little bit. Some people claim they don't get angry, they get irritated. Others say they don't get angry, they get frustrated. Some say they don't get angry, they get annoyed. For simplicity's sake, we're taking all that and we're packing it up as one. So we're all on the same page here. These are all under the lump category of anger. Anger doesn't mean you're off your rocker, raging, seething, just seeing red. You're just kind of mad at something or someone. So one aspect of the autism spectrum is the autistic meltdown. You've probably seen this mostly in the movies, generally very poorly displayed, but maybe even in real life. These things, they have triggers. They different triggers for different folks, but really it all boils down to one reason, and it's unmet expectations. Meltdowns tend to happen more in the autistic community than in the normie community, largely because we have a bit more rigid expectations, kind of following our trains of thought. We plan out things, we figure out how they should go, and try to steer things so we're able to predict what's coming up next, and ultimately have our expectations met. What often ends up happening is that people tend to be unpredictable, and despite our best efforts to predict the outcomes of interactions, humans throw a wrench into those plans that knocks us all off course. They don't literally throw wrenches, though, because I don't know very many people who literally throw wrenches into things, except on the movie Dodgeball. Meltdowns are seen as temper tantrums. That's how they're perceived from the outside. They look like fits of rage, perhaps a bit of crying, shouting, covering the ears, just ultimately trying to escape from that overload, that unmet expectation that all of a sudden everything piles up. Normies with good intentions tend to try to calm the melter downer, but despite their good intentions, they don't realize that most of the time, it's just making things worse. But really, that's not the anger I want to talk about in this episode. It's not not your typical meltdown where covering the ears, screaming, trying to reset the brain. Meltdowns look drastically different person to person. We tend to overemphasize the very loud outward ones that show a lot of everything going outwards. Yes, whatever. You get it there. Overstimulation and the expectation of being stimulated, not over or under, but is not met. And it leads to these episodes. Not podcast episodes, but maybe the crying and the shouting and the meltdown episode. But it's not always crying and shouting and melting down. It can be shutting down and getting really, really quiet. Perhaps it's separating from a group and just sitting alone for a period of time. Sometimes it can even look like psychotic episodes where the person becomes completely detached from reality and just you don't know where they're at. They can even manifest as self-harm. So often, those on the spectrum try to ground themselves back to reality, reduce that overstimulation by performing other stimulating acts. We just simply call it stimming. Generally, people see flapping hands as an autistic trait. That's their stim. And really, that is because it's the easiest one to see. If somebody's waving their hands and flapping their hands, you're going to notice right away. But if they're tapping or snapping their fingers or making a small clucking noises, maybe just rubbing their hands or rubbing their fingers together, stomping, things like that that aren't as loud or easily seen are also ways that those on the spectrum are trying to bring themselves back to reality by getting rid of the overstimulation that they can't control by doing something they can. So back in the day, when I was a teenager, long before I had any realization that I was on the autism spectrum, and most people didn't even realize there was a spectrum, someone I know said that I had trouble containing my anger, trouble controlling my anger. I say someone because I don't know who it actually was. I have some theories, but I don't know the actual person. I talked about this a while back in one of my earlier episodes when I went to work for Clydehurst Christian Ranch, a summer camp along the Boulder River, just outside of Big Timber, Montana. Great place. A lot of my friends were up there working for the summers. They made it sound incredible. It really was not a good fit for me. Good fit for other people, not me. Anyway, summer was approaching as my senior year of high school. I hadn't heard back if I had the job or not, and started to get a little worried. And I was like, you know, I need to make some plans here. And so I called him up. I called the boss man up, and they said my reference had a concern that I had trouble keeping my anger under control. At the time, I was 17 years old, and my mom had died at age 13. The references that I had put on the application largely knew me through age 13, 14-ish, and then I started to separate away from that particular group, but I didn't have strong references. in the new groups. Anyway, so I said something along the lines, well, that reference is probably seeing my actions and behavior around age 13 or 14. And I think most people would normally have a bit of an anger in that situation. This is referring to, you know, the five stages of grief that we know is first comes denial and then anger. But as I look back, I don't think they were referring to any anger that may have popped up from the grieving process. I'm sure it was there, but I don't think it was that, knowing what I know now. Of course, 20-some years later, it's not really an issue anymore. Really, it was more likely that instead of the traditional meltdown, and instead of visibly outwardly stimming, instead of these highly identifiable characteristics of someone on the spectrum, I just got mad. And since it was so long ago, I actually don't even have real clear examples from my life of where I was just kind of mad at people or something or groups of people that were the targets of this anger, that it was really not even actually anger. It was a lashing out of unmet expectations. But I do have a child whose mind is very similar to my own, and I can give examples of his angry outbursts. So my son loves to yell at our Alexa device. The robot won't do exactly what he wants it to do, or can't interpret the silly things that he has said, and he just gets angrier and angrier and calls it names and has these little outbursts at that device. Every now and then I'll ask him to complete a simple task. Let's say it's pick your coat up off the living room floor and hang it up. And so he picks it up and he tosses it over the back of a chair. And I have to tell him again, hey, I asked you to hang it up where it belongs. And he doesn't, and then he might drape it on the banister railing. And then I ask him again, and he gets a little snarky and has this angry outburst, and it comes across as anger. But I don't think it actually is. Suppose he's in the middle of something, and it's time to eat dinner. Call him to the table, and he might yell and get angry because he has to adjust his focus from whatever he's hyperfixating on at the time, and head to the kitchen table. Sometimes I'll ask him, repeatedly, to do something, and he either doesn't do it, or he half-asses it, or otherwise doesn't perform the way I expect him to perform. And then I'll get angry. And I know there are several times where these little angry outbursts just kind of pile up and up, until eventually it's kind of almost this, like, rage fest, where everyone takes a long time to calm down. So last summer, something happened. I don't even remember what brought it up, what led up to it. But I ended up just dragging a chair out into the garden and sat by myself for about an hour before I could return to normal, be less stimulated. Usually it doesn't take that long, but sometimes it does. So if you have a child on the spectrum, or you know a child on the spectrum, these anger episodes can look like tantrums. They look like when you have a toddler who's just crying because he or she didn't get their way. I sometimes tell my son to stop throwing a fit when I see these little anger outbursts. That generally just makes him angrier because he claims he's not throwing a fit. And really, in actuality, these anger outbursts aren't fits. They're not tantrums. Tantrums are a reaction to not getting your way. A toddler might say, I'm holding my breath until you give me what I want. Or I'll scream and cry and pound my fists on the floor until you give in to my demands. A boyfriend-girlfriend situation might seem might be a little more sophisticated, and it's, I'm giving you the silent treatment until you apologize to me. These types of things are tantrums. They're fits. These angry outbursts that I'm talking about, these angry outbursts on the spectrum, even though they seem to be kind of controlled and very similar to these tantrums, they aren't entirely controllable. Their anger that is a result of the brain trying to process too many things at once, similar to how an overstimulated narcoleptic will simply turn off and fall asleep. Some people who are on the spectrum, when they have an overstimulated brain, hoot and holler and get angry. The only difference between a child's angry outburst and an adult's angry outburst is later on in life, we do learn some coping mechanisms, and we can recognize things and implement measures to stop the outbursts before they get to the outburst stage. So that's why if you see me at a networking event where things get really loud and I get super overstimulated, I'm not ranting and raving and raging on the dum-dums that are making the situation insufferable. Instead, I make sure I don't get to that point. Part of it is knowing exactly where the bathrooms are so I can quickly retreat when I need a breath of fresh air. I don't know why I said fresh air in the bathroom together. Anyway, for kids, they don't know these signs yet. They don't recognize the physical feelings or the mental feelings of things building up. And what can end up happening is they hit that tipping point and anger, irritation, frustration, maybe a little punching, kicking, smashing of toys or otherwise looking like a little mini Hulk smash. Bruce Banner might be on the spectrum. I'm going to look into that. That is the outward meltdown of the brain not knowing what to do, as opposed to the outward tantrum of the brain trying to manipulate somebody else into doing something for them. Controllable, uncontrollable, controlled versus uncontrolled. So how do you deal with meltdowns that are manifested as rage fests? Often, it is best to just leave the child alone. Remove the stimulation, let their brain settle down from the overload. If they have a favorite sensory toy, hand that to them. Let them fidget with it. Let them refocus so they can come back to reality and express themselves with their big boy words. You know your own child, so some of these tips might not actually work with them, but it's a lot of trial and error sometimes, and you quickly learn what does work and what doesn't work, because what doesn't work makes things a whole lot worse. For myself, if you see me rage-festing, just give me a beer and let me sit in the garden in the quiet of the evening for a little while. Or maybe just give me a bag of chips. Let me crunch on them. A lot of people make fun of me. Currently, family members make fun of me for my chip eating, my snacking and crunching. I have a super good excuse now. It's not entirely me. It's a stimming coping mechanism. As a teenager, smashing things was always fun. I used to enjoy doing that. To take my old toys that I didn't, they were just packed up in a box, and just smash them. And in fact, it's actually still fun to smash things. That somebody created an entire industry around the rage rooms. Figure out what works. The things that don't will be easy to recognize that they don't. You've had a peek into the world where everything left is right. And if it feels right, then it must be left. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, like, comment, subscribe, help spread the word, join the Facebook community, and feel free to ask any questions you have over there or leave a comment on the podcast through the Podbean app. Remember that angry outbursts may not be due to actual anger, but rather an uncontrollable reaction to unmet expectations. And of course, share this podcast with your friends, whether they are left, normies, or right.